Welcome to Psychology Has It Backwards. This series will question the assumption that people are psychologically broken and need to be fixed. We will talk about how seeing people as innately healthy will change all of your interactions and outcomes. This is a true paradigm shift, and it simplifies the entire process of dealing with mental distress and allows for more profound and immediate changes.
Aloha, and welcome to Psychology Has It Backwards. This is a podcast that I do with the most wonderful, intelligent, articulate human being in my life, and probably one of the best on the planet, but I don't know everybody, so my life.
I assure you, no. But anyway, I'm Judy Sedgman, and I am always embarrassed by Chris's generous comments, but I really appreciate it because Chris is like, to me, like she is the therapist of all therapists and the friend of all friends and just one of the greatest people I know. So I think we have a mutual thing going here.
Yeah, we have a mutual admiration society, but that's one of the things people say, give us feedback about our podcast, right? Is that one of the things they love is our friendship, and we love our friendship. So yeah, we're happy that other people get that. And if you could get that with somebody in your life,
yeah,
it makes life so much easier to go through, to have that kind of a friendship where you get the good news and the bad news, and it's not personal, which is our topic for today, is making things personal.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I know for me this was really hard.
Yeah.
Because everything, I had this huge ego, everything was about me. And what, in a negative way, you know, it's like, it was what I call that being the center of the crap universe. Everything that was negative seemed like it was about me, you know, and I would take what people said to heart very, and hear in what they were saying, I would hear what I thought of myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suffer greatly because I was always concerned about why people didn't like me and what they didn't like about me and what I was doing wrong. And I had that on my mind all the time. And so I heard that from other people all the time. Now, what's interesting is that now I don't take much personally. And that's, let me tell you, that's a great relief. If you can listen to what we're saying today and not take things personally, you will get such relief in your life.
Absolutely.
Because it's the suffering that our ego does to us. And our ego is just what we think about ourselves. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about ego. Mm-hmm. So if you have negative thinking about yourself or insecure thinking about yourself, then you're going to take things will be filtered through that kind of perception of yourself, and then you end up thinking that's what other people think. And like, I remember my mother one time, we lived in this old hotel. It was built in 1876, I think. And the old dining room had become our apartment. And so the kitchen from the dining room was our kitchen, and we had our meals there. And my dad worked in the lobby of the hotel, and he was a very easygoing guy, just kind of stroll in. It was time for dinner. My mother would call him in. Meanwhile, my mother is like the Ever-Ready Bunny, or like more like, you know, who's that? Beep, beep, Roadrunner. You know, she'd be running around, taking care of everything and getting yourself really kind of anxious. And so I remember my dad strolls in one day, and he sat down on his bench, which was on one end of the table, and all of us kids were at the table. So I must have been like 4 or 5. And my mother sits down and she takes her fork and she slams it on the table and she goes, "That's it. I know what you're thinking." And she got up and left the table. And we're kind of all looking at each other like, what in the heck just happened? And my dad looked at it, he goes, "What did I do now?" And, you know, she just took things very personally. She got her feelings hurt a lot. And we tend to see a lot of that these days. There's a lot of people, mm-hmm. I don't I think people in general, but especially it seems like the younger generations, which is anybody under 70 for us, but I mean, like in their 20s, 30s, they're really get so, get their feelings hurt a lot. And so we thought maybe we could try to tackle that a little bit and help people to get some relief, because it's just a, it's remembering that everybody is living in their own thought created reality. Everybody lives in their own thinking. And to whatever degree you know that, you're, you know, at the effect of your thinking. So once you get that, you start to see like, oh, this is my thinking. I'm taking this personally. I'm making this be about me. I think you don't like me. I think that you think I'm stupid. I think this. Then you start to see how to get over it. It doesn't mean that people don't say stuff like that. It doesn't mean that people don't say mean, nasty things, or they get into a mood themselves, or they're in a bad place and they say something nasty that you could take personally. And most of us do initially, but then you have to decide whether you're going to chew on it for, you know, for the rest of your life sometimes, or you're going to let it go and recognize that, that you have a choice of whether you take what that person sees or says personally or not, whether it's true or not. Sometimes you got to take a look at it and say, yeah, maybe I am kind of a jerk sometimes and I need to change that. And other times it's like, oh boy, that person's just really in a bad mood right now. I feel sorry for them. Right? So it's like, it's not so much that there's truth or not truth in what they're saying. There might be truth. There might not be truth. But if you see it in an impersonal way, it becomes information for you about the other person or about yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing we need to see how to change. Then we can change how we are with that person, or we can change how we are with other people. And that frees you up. And once you see that, you don't take it personally anymore. You're like, it's funny. It's like a funny joke that you tell about yourself and how goofy you can get from time to time.
Goofy is kind of the word for it, isn't it? Because it really is. It's a weird feeling when you get caught in that. And I have to say, you know, I was an only child. And so I grew up in a kind of quiet household because my parents got along well. And generally speaking, we had a nice life. You know, we were just all happy together. And, you know, every once in a while, they'd have some kind of discussion. But when they disciplined me, my father was a lawyer, and he was very logical and very straightforward. And so I was used to him sitting down and saying, Judy, I got to talk to you about this. This is important. You have to listen. He didn't say, Judy, you know, we love you. You're such a lovely little child. And I know I don't want you to get feelings hurt or anything, but you know, I just have to tell you this. He would say that in that voice, Judy. And my mother, I always knew when I was going to get something from her because she called me Judith, which is my given, you know, my legal name. And she was the only person at that time that ever called me that, and only when she was upset with me. But I kind of grew up in an atmosphere in which nothing was that personal. You know, just your parents' job was to tell you when you did wrong. And I didn't have, you know, brothers and sisters kicking me around and fighting with me and all that. So I was very quiet. When I got into the world, yeah, I was in mostly junior high school is when all this starts. You know, all of a sudden it just looked to me like people are so mean. Which is kind of true in junior high school, but everybody's insecure in junior high school. But, you know, people would say terrible things or gossip. You know, my parents never gossiped. I never heard gossip until I was in school. And I was like, oh gosh, this is terrible. And I remember going home sometimes and I'd tell my mother, oh, this person said this and such, and this person said that and such, and they talk about me behind my back. And my mother said, so what? She never cared. You know, so it wasn't a really big issue to me until I got into the workplace. And because, you know, I kind of, if it was an authority figure like in college, I could handle it. But so my first real work after I taught for a few years was being a journalist. No one wants to talk to a journalist And even now, people don't like journalists because basically they're going to ask questions you don't want to answer. And so one of the first things I was told, as soon as I stopped writing up obituaries and little feature things and the things you start with, you know, the first time I had a real story, my editor said to me, "Don't take it personally. They're not going to want to talk to you. Just got to keep pushing. And you got to stay nice and stay quiet and just listen and wait for an entry and ask your questions." And I was like, "Oh, no problem." You know, I had to cover this little city government that was, it was just a little town that was one of the peripheral towns around the city where my paper was. And I went to and they were very corrupt, I might add. So the little government was, if as corrupt as you can be in a little city that doesn't have a lot of money, but they were, whatever they had, they were not using it well. And I had done my research and all the things you're supposed to do. And I was there ready to go. And I walked in and the mayor who was running the meeting that I walked into where I was going to ask my questions, the mayor said, "Oh yeah, here comes that young upstart Judy Sludgeman. And she just digs up dirt. That's what she does. She digs up dirt. She's one of those rotten journalists that come in and try to embarrass us small town people." And, and he just went on and on about it. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm not going to take this shit. And then I thought, oh, no. So it was a big experience for me. I mean, it was a sort of meaningless little thing, but it was about the sewer district or something. But, I just waited and finally he ran out of things to say about me and went on with the meeting. And then the issue came up and then I stood up and tried to ask my question. And he said, "Sit down. I'm in charge of this meeting." So I said, "Sir, I represent the public. I'm a journalist and the newspaper has, people have a right to know what's going on." And he says, "You don't represent anybody, blah, blah, blah." And there weren't enough people there to have anybody stand up for anybody. So finally, when the meeting was starting to wind down, I stood up again and I said, "So I'd like to ask my questions." And one of the city council members said, "Let's let her ask her questions." And so I asked my first question. I thought I better start with the killer question first because I knew I wasn't going to have much chance. And there was this gasp from somebody in the audience who kind of got the direction the question was going. And this person stood up and said, "Yeah, answer that." And so the mayor was kind of on the spot, and he gave some kind of answer and everything. But it was the first time I'd ever thought about how difficult it was not to take things personally when somebody's just slinging insults at you or saying things that are so meant to shut you up or trying to get you out of their face. And it was the first of, I was a journalist for almost 14 years, so I had plenty of experience by the time I was done. But it's really funny. In that profession, you learn very quickly that you have an obligation to your job to get your job done. And if you start taking things personally, mm-hmm. you're not going to be able to do it. And then I started to realize these people are the people that have done wrong and they know that I know it. Of course, they're going to try to shut me up because they know that I know something. And if I bring it up, it's going to be a problem for them. So they have to put me down. And that's the only way they know to do it. And if they weren't insecure and if they hadn't done something wrong, we wouldn't have this conversation. Mm-hmm. And then the funniest part came when I got out of journalism and went into other work. And then I started my own business. And when I was the CEO of the business, I lost all of that. All of a sudden, my clients would call me up. I was in a medical practice management business and all my clients were doctors. And doctors are busy and they're grumpy because they don't like business. They just like to see patients. They don't want to deal with the everyday problems. And that's why they hire people like me. And but when something would go wrong and the doctor didn't understand it, of course, who do they call? They call me. And at first, honest to God, I never said anything. I was very polite and I would take the information down and I would deal with it. But I suffered. Because I would say, I used to tell people, when people say, "What do you do for a living?" I'd say, "I do the impossible for the ungrateful." because it bothered me that they were ungrateful or that they didn't see that I could take care of it or whatever. And then I suddenly realized, oh my gosh, I'm like the court of last resort. They hired me to solve problems. They're not going to call me when everything's going great and say, hey, Judy, you're doing a great job. Thank you so much. They don't have time for that. They only called when something went wrong, and that I was the problem fixer. And that was my job, was to listen to their outrage and their complaints and not take it personally. Mm-hmm. And I was able to do it because of my training in journalism. But for two or three years before this, just when I was getting into the principles, I really suffered. And I knew when you use that word, Chris, I thought, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you just go home and you say, how could people not appreciate how hard I work? What did I do wrong? Why don't they care about me? Why don't they care about my feelings? Well, they don't.
No. No, they don't. And it is also, they're listening to you through their thinking. So whatever you're saying, they're taking personally, right? And that's what causes the problem. They take it personally and then think there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is so important is just to remember that if you're having a reaction to something that somebody says, you've got thinking about it. And that may or may not be what the person is trying to tell you.
Right.
Like I've gotten feedback from students or from clients sometimes when they'll say, well, you said this. I said, no, I didn't say that. This is what I said, but that's what you heard. Mm-hmm. And when our own thinking starts messing with what we're hearing, oh my God, we can just go to town. Like, I love that that poem, Lilies Loose.
Yeah.
That Bill Pettit's wife wrote, that Sue Pettit. But it's kind of like once you get into taking things personally, you like are on the hunt. You're on you're surveying the world for people to tell you something that you think, like, you're too fat or mm-hmm. that you should be a better speaker. Like, this is a funny story, right? Like, I used to have such bad speaking anxiety that my knees would knock the one time I had to give a public speak before I learned this from the principal. And so it's always been, it's like over the years, I still get a little anxious before I'm ready to talk, unless we're doing these podcasts, which we don't think about. But if I have time to think about it, sometimes I can, make myself a little bit fearful that somehow I'm not going to do a good enough job or I'm not going to say the right thing. But I had done this talk at a conference in Boston, and it was very intellectual. It came across, did not have a good feeling. It was awful. It was a terrible, in my mind anyway, it was terrible. It was probably neutral at best. But, in my mind, that was awful. And I got home to Hawaii after the conference, and in the mail, I got this letter. And it had a photograph, a Xerox copy of, for those of you who don't know, a printed copy of a page in a book that was on how to do better public speaking. And somebody wrote on it, you might like this article. And I was just mortified that I was so bad that somebody would send this anonymous thing to me, telling me what I already thought, right? Which was that I was a poor speaker. And I decided right then and there, I was never going to speak at another annual conference again. And I did not for like 2 years, 3 years, maybe. And finally somebody said, Chris, you got to talk. Because I had created a big clinic in Hawaii and I'd done a lot of things that people thought would be helpful to other people. So I did. I decided, okay, I'm going to do this. And so right before I'm going to go on, I'm talking to this woman, Lynn Keys, and I was told her how I used to get really anxious and how I got this letter from somebody telling me I was a poor speaker. And she says, oh yeah, I get those all the time too. And I was like, oh my God, it had nothing to do with me. It was just a random thing that I had suffered over for years
yeah.
because I held on to that my thought about that, right? Mm-hmm. So it made a great introduction to my talk that year. So I told that story. Everybody got quite a big laugh out of it. But, you know, that's kind of the thing. It's kind of like you have to get over yourself being perfect. Yeah. And understand that part of not being perfect is what allows us to learn and become different.
Yeah.
You know, and another time I was doing this, these workshops down in Des Moines, Iowa, and I was did it with another woman. And the first time we did it, she said to me, she said, "Oh, I can't wait to look at the evaluations." And I was like, "What? What?" Because for me, looking at the evaluations was suffering time, because all I'd notice was people that said things that they didn't like, right? That any of the, you could give fives on everything, but if you had one thing in there that said, well, Chris Heath talked too much or something, that would like destroy the whole thing for me. So I told her, I said, well, why would I want to look at that? We already did it. It's over. I can't do anything about it. If I screwed up, I already did. She goes, oh, no, I'm not looking for how we screwed up. I just love to hear how other people hear us, because then I get new ideas on how to come across in a way that people can hear what we're saying better. I was like, oh, that's a much better way of thinking about it than the way I was thinking about it, right?
That's really sweet. That's really sweet. You know, I really realize that, you know, I've lived most of my life, someone has been my mentor at some point, because I was always trying new things and doing things that I wasn't really ready to do yet. And I was ambitious, to put it that way. And I, when I think back on it, of all the people that were my mentors, the people that tried to soft pedal giving me information, you know, I remember this one woman one time that was kind of taking me under her wing as a young reporter. I never got to the point of what she was trying to say, because she would say all these really sweet, nice things about me. And, you know, and then buried in there would be something about something I'd done that was really bad. You know? But she was so overwhelmingly sweet and cautious in talking to me that it was really hard for me to get the point. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first managing editor I worked for when I became a young editor, he was very direct. He was a very, very brilliant person. He was a Harvard graduate. He's a really unbelievably smart, excellent journalist, you know, somebody you really want to learn from if you were me. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have a lot of time. You know, he wasn't going to spend a tremendous amount of time buttering you up before he told you the facts. And he didn't care if anybody else was listening or not. If he passed you by and he thought of something he needed to tell you. But he was neutral. He would hear it and think, oh, I shouldn't have this job. I wasn't ready. You know, and finally one time I asked him, I said, you know, are you disappointed in my work? He said, no. He said, you're one of the stars. You're one of the people we're looking at for, you know, a great future in journalism. And I said, oh, well, but you're always telling me things. And he said, you know, if I didn't care, if I didn't think you were going to make anything yourself, I wouldn't bother to tell you. And I said, oh, good point. Really? And he said, you know, the thing I like about you is that when I tell you something, you take it in and you do something about it. And I said, yeah, but sometimes I cry. And he said, well, that's not my problem. That's your problem. And it was really funny. It was kind of a cute conversation, because I realized it wasn't his problem. Mm-hmm. He never was mean. He was never nasty. He was always right. And he taught me. Oh, I mean, I just can't believe how much I learned from that person. But he didn't. He taught in neutral. He just told you the facts. It's like dragnet, just the facts, ma'am. Mm-hmm. And if you couldn't handle the facts, that was your problem. You could go in the bathroom and cry, but that wasn't his problem. You know? But obviously what he was saying is, well, you must get over it and listen to what I was saying. And the fact is, that's true. That's the one thing I always, when I could step back after getting hurt and really ask myself, what did he say? I would realize, oh, that's a really good point, mm-hmm. You know, and I would try to learn from it. So I think that that's the key, is to realize, yes, sometimes you have a personal reaction because we all have an ego, mm-hmm. and we like to be praised. And, you know, most people don't take the time to do that.
And we think we're right.
And we think we're right a lot, or we think we were, you know, they don't appreciate how right we are so often, even though we may have been wrong.
That's true.
You know, it's like, well, I was right 6 times, you know.
So it's true. I told my husband that once. He said, "You think you're right all the time." I said, "Well, I'm right so often. It's really hard for me to tell when I'm not." He just scoffed at me, but you know that's the way most people are, especially people that think they're smart or people that are smart, because your thinking works really well, and we tend to trust it too much, you know. But the trick is really, it's like if you take something personally, and the person is telling you something so that you feel bad. That just tells you about how bad they feel, because they think they feel bad because of something you did.
Right.
They don't know that they are feeling bad because of what they think of what you said. Right. And it doesn't mean that we all have an ego. Trust me, we all have an ego. But if you just remember, like, okay, that person's really stressed out right now. That person's really in a, you know, going through something, and I don't know what it is. And that's why they're talking to me like this. You know, like we were in Japan, and we had only one waitress the whole time we were there who was not very nice. And my people we were talking to said, "Oh, she's kind of." I said, "Oh, who knows what's going on in her life? We don't know. You know, maybe she's got a husband that beats her, or maybe that, you know, her mother is dying of cancer." But people go through things, and they say things that are harsh, that may be very direct. And if you're not used to that, your thinking about that is then to kind of take it personally and then make it be about them being bad to you. Now, if you do that, you're going to miss out on an opportunity to understand another human being, but also to see in yourself what you're thinking that's causing you to suffer. Because if somebody comes up to you and says, you know, those pink polka dots all over your face just make you look ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You don't go like, what do you mean pink polka dots on my face? I don't put pink polka dots. I would put purple polka dots on my face. Because you know you don't have pink polka dots on your face. Mm-hmm. But when people say things that you think are true,
that's
what gets you.
Yep.
You know, it's so when they say things that you know are totally not true, that's one thing. But thinking it yourself, and then that trick of the mind happens with thought, and it makes it seem like that person is making us feel bad. Mm-hmm. And we all do it. I mean, to this day, I do it sometimes when people say nasty things about me. I have to kind of take a breath and remember that it's okay, you know, and maybe there's something I need to clean up. Maybe there's something I need to apologize for. Maybe there's something I need to do. And maybe it has nothing to do with me at all.
Yeah. And maybe there's something that we need to learn.
Yeah.
And the lesson is in the conversation, even though the person's tone might have started off not to our liking.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think sometimes when people are direct, other people mistake it for not liking them.
Yeah.
It's like me and that editor I mentioned to you, like he spoke in neutral terms, but he was businesslike, and he spoke about he told you what he wanted to tell you. He wasn't going to spend a lot of time chit-chatting about how great you were, you know? And I realized that that's kind of a gift, because mm-hmm. I always knew exactly what he meant. You know, I knew what he was talking about. I didn't have to sort through it and go like, well, he said these really nice things, and then he said this other thing, whatever, mm-hmm. what he meant. I knew exactly what he meant. He meant you messed that up. And that happens. And that happens all the time. And it still happens. So I think the most important thing to know in life is, like Chris started out saying, that we all live in our own little thought bubble. And always my goal when people talk to me is to listen for the kernel, listen for the essence, listen for the moment of truth in there. And if there isn't one, just let it go and assume the person is just not having a really nice day. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. There's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah. And if you're in your head, keep going over it and over it and over it and over it, you're trying to convince yourself you're right.
Yeah.
So they may have said something that was truthful.
Right.
You know, like sometimes people tell you the truth and your ego just defends like crazy.
Yeah.
And the more you think about it, gotta think about it, think about it, think about it, the more right you get and the more mean they get.
Yeah.
But if you're doing that, that's your signal that something in you got touched. Take a look at that. Don't be afraid to take a look at that. It's okay. We all think goofy things and we don't know we think it until somebody gives us a mirror and like, oh my God, I do have a pimple on my nose. You know, it's kind of like, then you can change it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're walking around in the world acting in a certain way or communicating in a certain way and other people don't like it. And you have no clue. That's how you're coming across.
Yeah, and we get stuck in time. You know, I think our goal in life is to keep growing and learning as long as we live and to keep seeing beyond tomorrow, seeing tomorrow what's beyond what we know today. Mm-hmm. And one of the gifts that we've been given is socialization to find that out. You know, it's like we listen to other people and we learn, or we learn by watching them. Mm-hmm. And it's never personal. Everyone is speaking the best thought they have at the moment. And even when people are hurtful, it's because they're hurting, you know, themselves. And if people are truly hurtful and say things that are just awful, you just have to just accept the fact that my heart goes out to them. I think, oh dear, you know, this person is really struggling.
And frequently you'll have no clue that they think what they think. So you have no clue that what you're saying would hurt their feelings.
Right.
Right? Because you can't be in their head. You don't know their past, their experiences, the beliefs they have.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you walk into it. You walk into the muck, then you got to clean it up and get out of there. But we have to all have kind of understanding for each other that we're all duped by our thinking to X degree. We all have insecurity. We all get caught up in our ego. And it's like, just be grateful it's not you if somebody else does it.
Well, anyway, the most important thing is just to remember that everybody has innate health. Yeah. We all are resilient and we have the ability to think our way away from it. And sometimes we do that. And don't let idle words or conversations become an instrument of self-torture. You know, allow yourself to learn what you can learn. And if there's nothing to learn, let it go.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, let's call it a day.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Have a great week, everybody.
Okay.
Aloha.
Bye.
We hope you heard something new and that you will continue to join us to challenge the prevailing thinking about the possibilities for health in everyone. To subscribe to the podcast, visit our website at psychologyhasitbackwards.com.